Hello, Legion of Audience. This is James, and before we get started today, I wanted to take a second and let you all know about the brand new Who Would Win Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and get behind-the-scenes access like you've never seen before, go to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow right now. Who Would Win patrons will have access to outtake videos, early info on battles, and even get a vote on characters that we'll use in upcoming episodes. So if you'd like to support me and the show, head to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow, and for as little as $5 a month, you can define yourself as more than just a fan. You'll be an official member of the Legion. Hope to see you there.
It is just another Saturday morning of AYSO youth soccer. The U14 boys teams are going back and forth, with Pugsley Adams on defense for the purple team and Eddie Munster wearing green on offense. The two have been jostling with each other for position all game, and tensions on the sidelines are beginning to spill over. A high ball comes in close to the box, and both kids jump for it, colliding in the air. Both go down in a heap as the referee blows their whistle to stop play. It is then that the energy turns dark, as shouting between the families gets more intense, as both rush the field to tend to their injured sons. Nobody knows who struck who first, but this game of soccer is about to turn bloody awful. It's traditional American family versus traditional American family. It's the New Yorker versus Universal Pictures. It's the Addams Family versus the Munsters. Today on Who Would Win?
And welcome to another episode of Who Would Win, a show that completely ignores anything important happening in the world and instead focuses on a fictional battle between two characters from the worlds of comics, sci-fi, and fantasy. I'm your host, James Gavsey, and as always, I'm joined by the one and only Ray Stikanis. Shocktober concludes with an epic matchup that has been destined to take place on this very podcast since the beginnings of the Who Would Win show. In one corner, you have the Munsters, a campy 1960s sitcom following a lovable, quirky family of classic horror monsters living an everyday suburban life. And in the other corner, you have the Addams Family, a darkly comedic franchise featuring a wealthy, eccentric, and macabre family whose love for all things creepy and kooky serves as a satirical reflection of societal norms. That's a mouthful right there. As usual, I did the patented Who Would Win Google test just to see how many times this matchup has been discussed. And look, this matchup has been discussed literally a billion times at least. Clearly, this matchup deserves the Who Would Win treatment, and it's about time that it finally got it. Ray, what are your thoughts in today's battle?
I'm super interested in this battle. We're going to introduce our judge in a moment, and when I had the idea that let's do this kind of, it is sort of a Showdown September adjacent type of battle, but it definitely fits in our Shocktober theme as well. And I just knew this judge was coming on the show, and I said, here is a matchup with some teeth. Here is a matchup with some fangs. Here is a matchup that we can really get some juicy goodness out of. And I think we're going to bring it today.
I don't think you're wrong. You know, this matchup is extra special in my mind because it's actually the tiebreaker, the decision maker, if you will, to determine this year's Shocktober champion. And when you have such an important match, such as this particular epic battle, there's really only one judge who can step up and render an equally epic decision. So, making another appearance on the Who Would Win show, it's voice actor extraordinaire and fan favorite of the Who Would Win show, it's Frank Todaro. Frank, welcome back to Who Would Win.
Greetings, mortals. It gives me great pleasure to rise from the grave to the occasion once again.
Ooh. I mean, I don't know where the character stops. This is just so amazing. All right, listen, Frank, before we
it's
get
like
into
Paul
this.
It's a Paul Bearer thing there towards the end. I don't know.
The visual is fantastic as well. Just tell the Legion of Audience, our faithful fan base, what you've been up to.
About 5'6", weird genetics. My family's normally a really tall bunch of war heroes, 6 foot tall, but I'm only 5'6". It's just a kind of something that happened. But, I look like everybody else in my family. It's just the height thing. I've been having some fun. I've been screaming in a box. I've been paying the rent with it. There was that 40th Transformers thing that came out recently. Some Bugs Bunny stuff. A bunch of fun things. But, good stuff. I'm happy.
You know, you say you're 5'6", but you definitely have the presence of like a 7'5 type of colossus type of person that comes through. We said this at the beginning of the show, before the show started, and I just got to tell our fan base, Legion of Audience, something.
What'd I do?
Frank Todaro is an amazing human being. I have been lucky enough to see him on panels at San Diego Comic-Con before and after and during. And not only is he great on as a panelist for voice acting and what have you and the industry insiders and what have you, but he's also just this incredible person who loves the fans and just makes you so happy that you get to meet someone that you look up to. You know, what's that expression? Be careful meeting your heroes. You might be disappointed. Not the case with Frank Todaro, an absolute great human being. Not saying this at all to influence you as a judge whatsoever. This is actually me just being 100% legit. I've seen you in action. You are fantastic. So I got to ask you, Frank,
oh, man.
I think I already kind of answered this, but in your own words, why are the fans so important to you?
I mean, I I'm just as terrible taking compliments now as I was before. I am one. There's no difference. This is a big stew that, you know, I just happen to be the meat. Someone else is the potatoes. So in the same way that, like, you know, 20 years ago, I was talking to my heroes and they were being kind to me. Holy crap. I have the opportunity to be as kind to someone else who then will do it further down, further down, further down. And it's just how it works. You know, how can you not?
I do know, but I've been lucky enough to work with a good number of voice actors and really see voice actors, you know, do what they do and they're all their magnificence. And I got to tell you, there's something about voice actors, and you definitely demonstrate that too. They're wonderful people, great to work with. At least the people I've been lucky enough to be around, just absolutely great, great stuff. Now, listen, today's matchup is actually got some huge implications. Ray has not been happy. He hasn't really said anything so far. Yeah, that's the thing. He lost. Showdown September. He's on the verge of possibly winning or losing Shocktober. This is something where, you know, it goes one way. Ray Sicanus is your best friend. It goes the wrong way. Ray Sicanus is shouting your name to the heavens in a horrible way, in such a way that all of Glendale is going to hear this. How do you deal with this kind of responsibility?
You know, it doesn't matter if you win or lose. It's if you had fun playing, right? Isn't that what they say? Yeah, and painted on the back of auditoriums and gymnasiums, and I think I'm putting Ray to sleep. I'm so sorry. It's
okay. Ray never finished high school. He's not going to get the reference.
Let me tell you right now, the AYSO soccer reference at the top of the show is based on real life events, because for the first time ever, I am a coach of a soccer team of with my kid on it.
Cool.
For the AYSO, and I had a ref come up to me at the end of a very recent game, and she stood right in front of me. She goes, "Hey, remember, we're not keeping score at this age." And I looked right at her and I said, "Of course we don't keep score at this age." And then I immediately turned around to the rest of the team and the parents and I said, "We bleeping won today, 4-2. Let's go." And look, we've had a very successful soccer year,
yeah,
partially due to me. In fact,
that's
I would argue mostly due to me. You're welcome, kids.
But I would also add, though, as a Mets fan, there is some in losing, there is a certain honor, character building, if you will, when you get used to that disappointment. You know, you feel the highest highs and the lowest lows, and that's why Mets fans are the best people, because, you know, we know something's going to happen. You know, we just put a picture of Grimace up on our table and be happy that we got as far as we did. So
I understand
Grimace.
What's up with Mets fans. I, too, have spent way too much money and gotten nothing for it.
Oh, damn. I'm the judge today.
That's wow. Way to go. All right, guys, listen, we could keep going. We literally could keep doing this forever because Frank is awesome. But we have a battle to get to. So with all that being said, Ray, please do us the honors and announce today's matchup.
Representing classic television, the family with the second most powerful snap in history, the Addams Family. And representing also classic television, the group that proves that the family who scares together cares together, the Munsters.
Well done, Ray. Now, I actually mean it this time, too. Well done, Ray. Now, before we go any further, let's go over the basics. So do those poor kids on the field, Ray.
You mean those winners I leave in my wake? You're welcome, kids.
Who says we should be worried about the next generation of kids in America? Not me, I say. Before we go any further, let's go over the basics of a Who Would Win match. Now, Easter Banner will make 3 points. Keep in mind that the Who Would Win match is a random encounter in neutral location with no prior knowledge or prep time allowed. And the debater has to stay within the confines of the character. And when it comes to determining the winner, it's the judge who has the final say and will determine which character lost based on death, incapacitation, or battlefield removal. I just love that we have these ways of winning and losing for this battle today, with no outside interference being allowed. Remember, you can always check out all of the rules on our website at www.whowouldwinshow.tv. And before we get started, don't forget to visit the official Who Would Win store. Visit sayword.co/collections. That's sayword.co/collections. And click on the Who Would Win merch section to get your hands on some great Who Would Win shirts, hats, hoodies, and our very own proprietary 3D printed Who Would Win versus stand. And now let's get to the tale of the tape for both of our commands. Ray, please give us the details for the Addams Family.
The Addams Family is a spooky family whose reach extends to all forms of media. They were created by Charles Addams and first appeared, and I didn't realize this till I did the research, in New Yorker comic strips that date back to 1938. Wow. They're creepy and they're spooky. They're altogether ooky. They're the Addams Family. Now, as a group, the Addams are an old money family hailing from Spain with an interest in the dark and the macabre. Led by married couple Gomez and Morticia, kids Pugsley and Wednesday, their butler Lurch, Uncle Fester, Cousin It, and of course Thing, the disembodied hand, the Addams were always getting up to hijinks, seemingly unaware that the rest of the world finds them terrifying, because to themselves, they're just a very normal family doing very normal things, except that that is absolutely not true. Fun fact, the names of all the characters of the Addams Family, you have to believe they're etched into our subconsciouses forever. But did you know, again, crazy, for a long time, this was not possible. You see, since they were only an occasionally published comic strip in The New Yorker for so much of their early life, creator Charles Addams never bothered to give the characters names at all. The first one to get a name was Wednesday Addams because they put out a doll in 1962. 24 years after the family first debuted, they got their first name. The others were all named in quick succession, however, for the 1964 TV show that we all know and love, and that is eventually the Addams Family.
I love it. Now, here are the important details for The Munsters. The Munsters, a very much beloved American sitcom, debuted on September 24th, 1964 on CBS, and was created by Alan Burns, Chris Hayward, with contributions from producers Norman Lear and Al Lewis. The concept was developed by Universal Studios, leveraging their iconic monster film legacy with characters modeled after horror archetypes like Frankenstein's monster, Dracula, and werewolves. The series follows the endearingly oddball Munster family, Herman, Lily, Grandpa, Eddie, and their normal cousin Marilyn. I'm using air quotes around normal because something about cousin Marilyn wasn't so normal. Could just be a me thing. Living in suburban Mockingbird Heights, which I believe was somewhere in Los Angeles. Though they resemble monsters, their lives reflect typical family dynamics, adding humor through the contrast between their spooky appearance and wholesome values. Despite running for only two seasons, with the last one ending in 1966, The Munsters has enjoyed a lasting impact with various spin-offs, films, animated specials, and reboots, such as The Munsters Today, released in 1988, and the, unfortunately not, Academy Award-winning Rob Zombie-directed The Munsters back in 2022. That movie just should have gotten so much more acclaim. And here's an interesting fact about The Munsters. Did you know there's a specific reason why The Munsters were not broadcast in color at the time? It's true. Look, in the 60s, color television was a very common thing, and less television series were produced in black and white. But The Munsters series was, even though the pilot for the series was produced in color, still produced in black and white. See, just like today, post-production costs were insane back then, and to produce The Munsters in color would have meant an additional $10,000 in post-production costs in the 60s, which is the equivalent to roughly $3.5 billion in today's economy. So instead of spending the extra 10 grand, the producers thought they could get away with no color for the series due to the classic horror themes and classic horror characters in the series that were mostly produced originally in black and white films, and somehow it worked. Just goes to show you how important producers are to the creative process. Am I right? No? Oh, well, whatever. It's all good. And now you have the facts on both opponents. Frank, do you have any questions before we get started?
I am going to take all of my personal feelings and fandom, because these are two properties very dear to my heart, and try to put that in a box. I will only judge from what you two gentlemen tell me about these two. My only question is, are we using all versions of these two franchises in determining what their prowess is?
I am going to say right now, I am restricting myself to what I will call the live action version of the Addams Family.
Excellent.
And wait, for the so monsters? Is that the films? Is that the films? Is that the series? Is
much
that the 1960s?
Much like when James says he's using the comic book version of Batman, and then that means whatever the heck he needs it to mean. I am using the live action version of the Addams Family.
Of course. Someone's desperate for the win. I get it. All right. Well, here's the deal. I'm only referencing the 1960s classic version of the monsters because that's what I do. All right. Okay. This is going to be insane.
So no Rob Zombie movie, no punk rock past or all right.
Yeah. Listen, I love Rob Zombie. I really do love Rob Zombie, by the way. Dragula is just my perpetual theme song on my workout list. Working out raise where you go to the gym and
not
do extra. Anyway, the point is, I love all that, but I'm sticking with the 60s series because I have found some absolute insanity coming from that series, which I can't wait to unleash on the Who Would Win show. All right, Ray, let's do this. Hit us with your point number one.
Point number one. We're going to start talking about family members. We're going to open up with Pugsley and Wednesday the kids, because we're going to have to start over here. Because at first, when I was looking at this, I said to myself, Pugsley's our tank. Pugsley, as far as this crew goes, is the one who can soak damage, but probably doesn't have a whole lot of offensive potential to put back in there. And at first glance, that's what you would think. Remember in the TV show, Wednesday Addams is constantly murdering him, putting him in torture devices, dropping him from great heights, hanging him from a noose, and he never dies. He always keeps coming back. We will get into that a little bit in my point number two. But then I discovered that Pugsley himself is a little bit of a mad scientist kind of a vibe going on there. And he created his own disintegrator gun that was used in multiple two episodes of the Addams Family TV show. When he was demonstrating the disintegrator gun to his family and some guests, he was able to take household objects such as a lamp and a vase, and he was able to disintegrate both of them and make them disappear. If he uses his disintegrator gun or a weapon of similar properties, he becomes Doom Guy in this scenario, and he is able to completely oof many members of the Munsters from a distance. In fact, it's not that it can't work on people. Uncle Fester explained that that's how they lost Cousin Creep. He got hit with the disintegrator gun, and he got taken away. Absolutely fantastic. So that's Pugsley and what he brings to the table. Now, Wednesday, I don't think I need to even explain deeply, but the new TV show, you know, the live action one, let us flesh out that character a little bit more than it had been before, because it turns out Wednesday Addams has psychic powers. That's right. She has the psychic raven powers. And what does that mean? It means that she sees negative emotion. She has negative visions of the future, which is good, especially in a combat sense, because she can tell the way that she can, like, get rid of somebody, or she knows the way that one of her family members might get taken out themselves. That allows her to be put in a position to do the thing that needs to be done to take out the opponent, or turn around and prevent the item that needs to be done in order to take out one member of her side. This battle is very much going to be a chess match. This battle is not just going to be like, remember that Monty Python sketch where they reenacted the Battle of Pearl Harbor with the old ladies club? It's not going to be that in the mud, hitting each other with purses and flailing about. This is definitely going to be a, you take on this one, you take on this one. And I'm going to say right now, the strategery side of things definitely favors the Addams Family. I don't see the Munsters being able to put together a lot of a cogent, cohesive game plan, but the Addams Family works very, very well together as a family. They know each other's strengths and weaknesses, and they know how to put themselves in position for success. And I think when it comes down to this battle, the Addams as a team and these two kids in general bring a lot more than the kids on the Munsters side do. And that's my point number one.
All right, I'm going to have to push back on some of this ridiculousness, or nonsense, as Race to Kings puts it. Again, I love how you're jumping from one version to another version and what have you. But let me just get down to the bottom of this. When it comes to Pugsley, actually, it's pretty cool, I'm not going to lie. Wednesday really typically never completes the torture or the murder in mind. That's the running joke. It's just when she's about to, something interrupts or just doesn't go through. So it's a lot of like, hey, I'm almost there, but never finishes or follows through for some reason. I don't know what the whole deal is, but never really completes it. Just makes me question Wednesday's commitment to her craft, if you will. This whole disintegrator ray, I'd say it's a one-off kind of thing. But even if that's not the case, you know, lamps, regular humans and what have you, those are very less dense as organic and just material in general than what you're dealing with super durable beings such as vampires, werewolves, and the super zombie of the Frankenstein monster that is, you know, Herman Munster. When it comes to Wednesday, I believe her psychic powers are cool, but they're sometimes very ambiguous, sometimes vague. And here's the other thing with the monsters, not a lot of negativity with them. They do stuff in a very positive way and get stuff done. So I'm not really sure how that's going to work out. And in terms of strategery, as you like to put it, yeah, there's someone on the Munsters family who has hundreds of years of strategy and staying alive despite the odds being against them. Let me reveal all of this, my point number one. Because in my point number one, let's just break down each member of the Munsters, kind of similar to what Ray did for Pugsley and Wednesday. Okay, now, first of all, let's start with Lily Munster. She's the vampire main character of the family, married to Herman Munster. And just like Ray Stecanus, Lily is filled with charm and elegance. That's at least how I think about Ray. It could be different than everyone else. Now, in terms of powers and ability, she is immortal. She has enhanced strength, most likely low-level superhuman-level strength. She has night vision, and most importantly, she has the power of hypnosis. Her hypnosis is so powerful that she hypnotized an entire group of visitors to stop them from panicking when they saw her family. I guess people get freaked out by it. She can also move at low-level super speed. She can climb walls and ceilings with ease, and she keeps a very calm head during any type of chaotic situation that seems to come the way of the Munsters. She's a level head and all this kind of stuff. Now there's Grandpa Munster, a.k.a. Sam Dracula, a.k.a. I'm just going to call him Dracula. That's right. It's actually Dracula. He's a centuries-old vampire with mastery in sorcery and science. He can also shapeshift into bats and wolves and werewolves. He has the power of mind control. He's a sorcerer, a master of brewing powerful potions on the spot, MacGyver style. And he's a master inventor and can create advanced tech. He's kind of like the Munsters version of Dr. Doom. He's physically faster, stronger, and more durable than Lily, as he's a much older and more powerful vampire. For example, he once turned into a wolf to escape police custody because he knew that was the easiest way to do it. He brewed an invisibility potion on the spot that worked super well. His scientific feats include assembling rockets from raw materials and scratch, like just scratch right then and there. And if that wasn't enough, he also has the power of hypnosis and mind control. He has hypnotized Herman Munster into calming down from a rage. Yeah, that's right. Herman Munster can actually rage out. And he mind-controlled Eddie into doing his homework. That is actually crazy. Making a kid do their homework through mind control, that's awesome. Now, remember, Grandpa Munster could easily mind-control the Addams family as a whole. This is a guy who created a teleportation device, perfected cloning, and even constructed rockets from stuff lying around his house, as I mentioned earlier. And to make this even crazier, both Lily and Grandpa Munster are daywalkers. That's right. They are so powerful that the sun doesn't affect them whatsoever. This is crazy. Then there's Eddie Munster. He's a werewolf child. A werewolf child, for gosh sakes. In terms of powers and abilities, he has enhanced senses such as smell, sight, and hearing. He has superhuman agility, super speed, and super strength. He's also kind of got this inside rage that because he wants to kind of destroy stuff and kind of tap into his feral instincts. That's kept under control by his mom and Herman Munster as well. Eddie one time transformed his hands into like crazy werewolf claws during a school play and detected a hidden item across the locked room just by smelling it. He's also been known to wrestle large animals and win thanks to his werewolf power. That's just a fun thing. There's Marilyn Munster, named, I guess, after Marilyn Monroe. She's the, again, using air quotes, normal human in the family, but her relatives see her as an oddity, which is cool. Marilyn once stayed perfectly composed during a haunted house tour where the rest of the guests fled screaming. Her superpower, I guess, is navigating dating life with relatives who casually sleep in coffins and breathe fire. I do think she's a secret sociopath and serial killer, as people never see or hear from her boyfriends. Look, this is a thing, Frank Sodaro. You know what I'm talking about. Her boyfriends come in, they meet everyone, and you never see them again. Ooh, and Marilyn's all like calm and cool and collected. Hey, what's going on? Here's my abnormal family. I'm the normal one. She's the real monster in this family. Yeah, I said it. Of course, there's the pet, and everyone loves their pets, of course. And the Munsters are no different. They have Spot, the family dragon, for gosh sake. Spot is a fire-breathing dragon, lives under the stairs, has fire breath, immense strength, and an intimidating roar that scares the heck out of people. Spot once roasted an entire tree by sneezing fire accidentally. He's been known to chase away intruders with just a growl. Eddie even rode Spot through the neighborhood once, because why not, and it terrified the locals. And Spot is heavily protective of his family. And we didn't even get to Herman Munster, the heavy hitter of the group. But for now, all of that is my point number one.
Oh, man, so much I need to push back on here because you misrepresented, of course, so many different things. Especially, first off, Wednesday absolutely is torturing and hurting Pugsley. It's just not all necessarily on camera. Let's face it, the camera can only be running so much of the time. The fact that she's constantly trying to do this and getting interrupted, there must have been several times we just don't see where she actually goes through with it and hangs him, and that all goes through. And your representation of Sam Dracula as this, like, genius Doc Brown character, well, look, he's a great inventor. I'm not going to take that away from him. However, as is well known, most of his inventions don't work. They malfunction. They blow up. They don't do the thing they are supposed to be doing. Stop pretending that this dude is Elon Musk as we knew him in 2002 and understand he's Elon Musk as we know him in 2024. The stuff doesn't work, James. In fact, his own kid, Herman, called him a crackpot mad scientist. Not his own kid, but you know what I'm saying. And he also loves very beautiful women. He gets taken away by them. Guess what? Morticia Adams is one of the most beautiful women in the history of fiction. He's going to get enamored. His guard is going to be let down, and he's going to get dropped. Last thing to talk about this, he needs his lab to make these inventions, James. He doesn't just whip them up on the spot willy-nilly like you pretend. He has a lab for it that I do not believe in the confines of this battle he will have access to.
I gotta tell you, I'm loving where this is going. Because I have counterpoints to your counterpoints, and you've got counterpoints to my counterpoints. But none of that matters, because we need to see what our judge Frank Todaro has to say about this. Frank, you've heard one point from both me and myself. Where is your head at so far with this fight?
You know, my head is changing every 5 seconds. I'm very glad that, Ray, you brought out the presumed immortality of Pugsley right out of the bat, and the presumed superpowers of Wednesday, because the biggest hurdle that you have to get through is that these are actual monsters with superpowers in 1313 Mockingbird Lane, and they are going to hold their own on a battlefield. However, you did also bring up that Grandpa Munster does need the Batcave in order to do anything or to do a percentage of the things that, James, you put out there. But good Lord, you listed some amazing things that the Munsters can do. And you said right in point one, the word that I was waiting to hear, which was spot. So, I need to hear how Cousin Creep is the same durability as the Munsters. I need to hear, I want to hear more about Pugsley. I want to hear more about how these two, in their own abilities, can go toe-to-toe. Let me hear
it. All good points. All good points from Frank Todaro. All I heard was that I am so far ahead that Ray really needs to kind of step up his game. Stuff I've heard many times before. This is getting exciting. Stay tuned for point number two.
Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. Let's be the most real for a moment here, if you'll allow me. The holiday season will be upon us faster than you can say Ray is right. Our friends at Uncommon Goods have got a fantastic catalog of unique hand-picked gifts that will make shopping for loved ones easy. Look, I just got some gifts from Uncommon Goods delivered last week. Now, don't tell my kid, but I got her a kit that makes frozen bubbles because science is cool and also, you know, bubbles, right? Also, I got her a Roll of the Dice Enchanted Forest game book. This is a book we can read together. Great. Plus, a die and a map, so it's a game as well. I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty excited to check this one out with her. Please don't spoil it. Anybody out there, any of you. So support artists and small businesses this year and check out Uncommon Goods for high quality, unique gifts that are most of the time made here in the good old US of A. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/whowouldwin. That's uncommongoods.com/whowouldwin for 15% off. Now don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
And we're back. All right, Ray, let's see what you got. Hit us with your point number two.
I mean, first off, Spot. You know, Spot is a dragon, of course. He doesn't necessarily get super involved and active. I mean, what, does he live under the stairs for people who only come in the front door of the Munster's house? Is there an expectation that Spot leaves the house? Is there an expectation that Spot would even be there on a neutral battlefield if he never leaves the house of the Munsters? My argument would be no, we're not fighting in the Munsters' house. Therefore, Spot really not going to be a factor in this battle. Now, we're going to talk about Gomez and Morticia Adams, the matriarch and patriarch of the Adams family. And first off, in the TV show, they were played by John Astin and Carolyn Jones. And why that's very, very important is I most recently did a watch of Batman 1966, the entire series with my kid, because she needs to be raised properly. And one thing that we discover with this, well, first off, the Munsters and Adams family both were on at the exact same time, both lasted for two seasons, both were in black and white and lost out to color shows. And what came out in 1966 that was campy and fun and in color and basically shut both of these shows down? It was Batman. Batman killed the Munsters. Batman killed the Addams Family TV shows. And those two people, John Astin and Carolyn Jones, played villains on the Batman show. That would be the Riddler and Marcia, Queen of Diamonds. And I believe there was the DNA of Batman supervillains spread all throughout the Addams Family, whether you'd like to believe it or not. Gomez Adams has some Riddler-like qualities. He is a very, very smart guy. He's a genius. He, in fact, invented his own computer system called the Wizzo, and that allowed him to predict the horse races and political elections. And he was able to just plug in data into his own computer that he invented and get some answers for himself. So he could have seen this battle coming and allowed for the group to prep ahead of time, even though that's not within the rules. He also has supernatural reflexes. He is nimble. He is fast. He has acrobatic and can jump. The thing about the Munsters when they fight is, especially Herman Munster and Grandpa Munster, they don't move very fast, right? These, I'm not going to say they're not strong. I'm not going to say they don't have other abilities. Of course they do. But when it comes to actual in the trenches fighting, I think the Munsters are actually at a disadvantage because of how ponderous they are when they move. You've seen Herman Munster move. He's not exactly Baryshnikov out there, right? He's not exactly performing Swan Lake on CBC television when I was growing up. I'm just saying. He's also a great sword fighter, is Gomez Adams. Well known that he is trained very hard in the sword, and he often has one nearby, and he can use it to hurt people. And he has a weapon now, whereas the Munsters tend not to fight with weapons, as I have been able to see. Morticia Adams also has psychic powers. I believe they're referred to as the Dove psychic powers. I might be getting that wrong. But essentially, it's the opposite of what Wednesday Adams has. She can only see positive things. So she would know how to get people in position to do the good things that they need to do, as opposed to understanding the bad things that are going to happen. That's why she can keep her poop together under the most stressful of situations, is because she has a mental clarity about her in all times. And because the Adams family communicate with the dead and ghosts, and they're a part of that spooky world, they're going to understand what the Munsters are from the get-go. The Munsters see themselves as very normal, even though they're monsters. They might not fully grasp what the Adams family is capable of walking in the door, because the Adams family is a team of immortals. Immortals, I found this out. In fact, it's been said that they have a graveyard in their backyard, but it's not a graveyard. They just entomb older family members and wake them up for special occasions, because Adam family members cannot die. They cannot hurt each other as well. And no Adams family member can cause harm to another one. It's understood. So they can be extra reckless in this battle and not worry about friendly fire and hurting each other, because they can't physically do it. And the final thing, the Adams family keeps a house full of torture devices. They are dark. They are spooky. They understand pain. the Munsters, while having these abilities, don't necessarily use them to their fullest potential because they see themselves as a regular American family. The Addams Family leans into the darkness, and that will make a difference here, and that's my point number two.
All right, I got a lot to push back on with this.
I don't see anything to push back on here.
Well, first of all, I do appreciate the whole Batman 66 reference, but again, completely different show. Although we all know that
live
the
action,
Kevin
James,
Conroy,
I think it counts.
We all know the Kevin Conroy fueled Batman animated series is the best, greatest, and most pure version of Batman now from the past and forevermore. It's just, you know, I miss Kevin Conroy. All right, now look, here's the deal. Gomez's computer, the Wizzo, as you kind of say it, it's really, really cool. Great for the 60s. But the problem is it takes time not only to compute these outcomes, but also to feed into it data. So you got to accumulate this data and, you know, you take the time for to put it into the Wizzo and then for the Wizzo to kind of crunch the numbers and do all of that. These are two things that this fight does not provide for the Addams Family. No time and no data because there's no prep, you know, avowed. This is a neutral location, a random encounter. There's no way they're going to know to be prepared for this with all these monsters coming at them. Now, on top of that, Herman Munster, I'm going to show you my point number two. He actually can move at super speed, and I've got examples for this, but, you know, you do re-race the Canis. And on top of that, a sword's great that Gomez uses. He's actually great with it, but I don't think a sword's really going to do that much against, you know, vampires. Definitely not against the Frankenstein's monster, the super-powered version of it, known as Herman Munster. And finally, Adam's family members, you're saying they can't hurt themselves. That's okay, a thing, I guess, whatever. But they can be hurt by people outside of the family. Guess what? That's what they're facing in this battle. Now, let me get to my point number two. And for my point number two, it's time to talk about Herman Munster, quite possibly the most powerful creature ever to appear on television in the 1960s, at least. Now, many people would look at this battle and incorrectly assume and somehow think, okay, Lurch from the Addams Family, Herman Munster from the Munster, somehow cancel each other, which is something that couldn't be further from the truth. As great as Lurch is, because he's awesome, he's nothing, and I mean nothing compared to what Herman Munster can bring to the table. First of all, Herman Munster is somewhere between 7'3 and 7'6. Lurch is about 6'9. That's a respectable height. Also, Lurch is tall and thin, whereas Herman Munster is insanely massive and is built like a taller version of Bane or kind of more closely to Colossus from the X-Men. And with that kind of build comes some insane powers and physicality. Firstly, he's got super strength. I'm talking about Herman Munster, of course. He's so strong that he can easily pick up a car with one hand. He can even throw a car as if he's throwing a bag of sand. While playing baseball for an undetermined Los Angeles Major League Baseball team, he went up to bat, casually tapped his bat against his shoe just to knock some dirt off. You know, we see baseball players do all that. And he accidentally completely destroyed the bat. That is something that's crazy. While on a movie set, he had a stunt driver. I don't know why the producer wanted him to do it, but it was just a thing. He had a stunt driver drive a car at full speed from a distance into him because I guess the producer thought that would hurt Herman Munster, be great for the camera, whatever. And as a result, the car that was driven by the stunt driver was completely crushed in. It was similar to like how Superman kind of stays there or how Hancock kind of puts his shoulder into like this bus that comes at him. The bus gets completely destroyed, except Herman just stayed there the whole time and the car gets crushed, just absolutely destroyed. And the stunt driver gets sent through the air dozens of feet down the road. And again, Herman Munster didn't budge whatsoever. He barely noticed the car slamming into him. When asked to hit a line drive while playing baseball, he said, okay, no problem. He gently hit the ball and it went like a freaking missile down the line. And then it went several yards underground with a light tap. When he hits a baseball and says, hey, I'm going to like hit it out of the park, it sounds like a rocket flying through the air. It disappears. I'm not saying it's going into orbit or going to space. I'm also not saying that. I'm pretty sure it's up in space somewhere right now. He's also got definite super speed. Look, we saw this. Again, he's playing baseball. He ran to first base, and he ran to first base so fast, there was some type of whirlwind behind him and force of air in front of him. And if the force of the air knocked down and knocked over the first baseman, in fact, it hit the first baseman so hard, it actually knocked out the first baseman because he was running so fast. That's crazy super speed. Evidently, he also has superhuman levels of stamina. He's able to, you know, do these athletic abilities for hours on end, full blast without tiring. He's also got, I don't know how another way to say it, he's got insane durability. He has tanked the equivalent of two lightning strikes to the head at the same time. A massive safe weighing at least 1,000 pounds fell on his head from a second story window, and the safe bounced harmlessly off of his head, which he didn't even really notice. And then the safe then crashes into the street, creating a massive crater in the road. Now, on top of his superhuman abilities, he also has insane athletic ability. His giant size really doesn't stop him from doing crazy feats. It's as if Andre the Giant had the athleticism of the greatest professional and Olympic athletes. As Joe Biden would say, it's no joke. I'm being serious. Herman Munster may quite possibly be one of the greatest super athletes of his time. As I already mentioned, he played professional baseball for a major league team without ever playing high-level baseball before. He just wasn't hitting the ball hard. He was calling his shots, asking people where he wanted him to hit the ball to. Fun fact, he was part of the Transatlantic Olympic Team of 1841. Transatlantic Olympic Team. I don't even know what that means, but it's transatlantic. Sounds impressive. If that wasn't enough, he rode a bucking bronco at a rodeo, stayed on the bucking bronco until the bucking bronco decided to become docile. That's right. It gave up. Normally you ride a bronco for what, 8 seconds, if you can stay on for that long. But Herman decided just to teach the horse a lesson and just stayed on the horse until it calmed down. And he had never ridden a freaking horse before. What kind of athleticism are we dealing with? He's also got combat skills. He's an accomplished boxer. He may have been a boxer for that freaking transatlantic Olympic team I mentioned before. He even competed as a professional wrestler, Ray Sicanus. And the only time he lost was when the wrestler he was facing told him that if Herman actually won, the wrestler would be financially ruined due to the loss. So Herman's like, okay, no problem. Just roll me up and pin me. Are you okay? You good? Got it. Fantastic. Until that stopped, and then Herman just absolutely destroyed people. And if all of that was enough, he's also an accomplished actor. He knows how to make himself intimidating and how to do a Godzilla type of deafening roar because he's an actor. He's been in movies. He's been in TV shows. And he knows how to put on, because he's a nice guy. But if he has to go there, he will go there. But the one thing that he has made crystal clear is that if you decide to hurt his family, his good nature disappears and you better run for the hills. All of that is my point number two.
Okay, so much to talk about right here. Herman Munster should be an entire point to himself. I'm glad that I would have done it that way. I'm glad that you did it that way. One thing to keep in mind here is I'm not going to doubt some of the physical strength of Herman Munster and some of his durability. I'm not really going to. You put out some great examples that show he's very difficult to hurt physically. He's very, and he can cause some damage physically. But that's where the Addams Family is going to get to him. Not physically. They're going to get to him mentally. Because he is a fun-loving, childish figure, and he is known for when he gets frustrated or doesn't get his way, what does he do? He breaks down and starts crying. He starts throwing a temper tantrum. He's ridiculously strong, of course, but he's also very naive, like the wrestler told him. And you said yourself, James, you put it out there. The wrestler himself told him, if I lose this fight, it will hurt me financially, and Herman threw the fight. What's going to happen here when the very, very intelligent and high emotional quotient, EQ, of the Addams Family gets a vibe for what this wrecking ball is all about? And they will quickly, because he's going to be asking other people what he's supposed to do. He's going to appear childlike to them in their communication with each other, because he's going to have to rely on his family. And through all of this, the Addams Family is going to get him to either get out of the fight or convince him he needs to be somewhere else, battlefield removing him.
This is, I'm telling you, this is getting the creative juices, the debating juices flowing. It's absolutely awesome. Here's the deal. We are at the turning point, Frank. You've had a moment to ponder 2 points from both Ray and myself. Who do you think is ahead, and what does the other side have to do to pull out the victory?
Well, I don't know if somehow my notes are visible, because Ray, you just said everything that I thought you needed to face to counter after, especially the wrestler thing. The wrestler thing was the point that you blew past, James, but it's the only weakness in this superhuman creature that you have described. However,
as someone who knows a thing or two about immortality, I'm wondering if the Addams truly are. Because your first point was, Wednesday keeps killing Pugsley over and over again. Should I keep doing this?
Yes.
Okay. But then you say that they can't kill each other. And then they're not immortal, because they can be hurt by other people outside of the family. Which one is it, Ray?
I mean, you're describing, like, Cyclops and Havoc. Like, can they just not hurt each other? Or are they immortal? But does that even matter with the strategy that you've laid out? I came in this thinking there's a bunch of Titans over in Mockingbird Lane. Those are some superpowered creatures. But, Ray, you're turning me. Let's see if it pays off.
spellbound by not Ray's debating skills, but definitely by Frank Todaro and what he brings to the table here. All right. This is going to be an insane ending to an even crazier battle. Stay tuned for point number three. And we're back. Ray, it's now or never. Hit us with your point number three.
We're going to talk about some of the other family members who would definitely be involved in point number three right here. First off, Lurch. We got to talk about Lurch. He's the butler. He's the chauffeur. He's the door answerer guy for the Addams Family. You know, and James, you said it yourself. I believe the original actor to play him was 6'9". Lurch is a true powerhouse. Now, has he shown the durability and strength of Herman Munster? I don't think I have the same type of examples that you have, but that doesn't stop Lurch from being a true powerhouse. He's somebody who could absolutely go toe-to-toe with Herman Munster for at least a certain period of time. Long enough for, and we're going to sacrifice Lurch to Herman, I think, at a certain point. But Lurch is going to be, it'll be a Pyrrhic victory. Because through that combat section, the Addams Family will figure out what Herman Munster's whole deal is and be able to get him battlefield removed and not involved anymore by seeing his childlike nature, seeing his striking potential, but also his severe weaknesses in the emotional level, right? Because essentially, you got a couple of people. You got Grandpa Munster and you got Herman Munster. A lot of the other people on the Munsters, they don't have quite that impact unless you're going to surprise me in point number three. They're not the heavy hitters that the rest of these two people are. Meanwhile, the Addams Families, I think, are a more complete unit. Every single member of this team can hurt you. Every single member of this team can do something bad. And I'll say right now, the second a few of the Munsters start going down and Herman breaks down in tears and he doesn't want to fight anymore because he's seeing harm come to his family and he'll say, this is not worth it to me. Remember, the Addams Family in their original incarnation were evil. They were evil characters. There is a Christmas card that they made in the original comic strips, not necessarily related, but grain of salt me here, where they poured boiling oil on Christmas carolers. And that made it onto a popular Christmas card. The Addams Family enjoy dishing out pain. The Munsters do not. And that, I hate the go there attitude, but they're going to go there, quite honestly, much harder than the Munsters ever could. Again, they keep Iron Maidens in their basement, for gosh sakes. Now, let's also talk about Cousin It. Cousin It, a common character, he drives a three-wheeled car pretty consistently in the show. He also, I found out, has an IQ of 300. He's the only person in history who got the Rorschach test correct, which is an amazing feat as far as I'm concerned. As an IQ of 300 in a three-wheeled car, he's going to have mobility and he's going to be able, because remember, he speaks a language that only the Adamses understand. He'll be able to bark out orders. He'll be able to general this thing for the rest of the team in many ways without the Munsters understanding what he is saying. And I think that's a big deal. And let's talk about Uncle Fester. This is a guy who got struck by lightning, so he has not just electricity generation powers, but the ability to manipulate electricity, right? That's what brought Frankenstein into this world. Maybe that's what can take Frankenstein out of this world at the end of the day. And lest we forget, Frankenstein has an aversion to fire. And what does electricity tend to bring with it? Fire, when it gets zapping into the wrong things. Heck, in the live-action movies, they make jokes about him being acquitted for murder. The Munsters don't kill people, but the Addams Family do, and joke about it afterwards. And to talk about the immortality question, Frank, that's the point. They can kill each other, but they don't kill each other, right? They can do death damage to each other, and they just pop back up from it, which means that they can attack in any kind of wild, sporadic, throw dynamite in the middle of the room way that they want to, and let's not pretend they do not have easy access to dynamite. And those attacks, as long as they're coming from each other, are not going to hurt each other. They will recover from it very, very quickly. I don't think the Munsters will. And the last point to bring up here is Thing. We got a little ace in the hole with Thing. I remember the documentary Evil Dead 2, where Ash took off his own hand, which later murdered somebody with a ceremonial dagger by grabbing it and then leaping at the person. I think Thing has some big Evil Dead 2 energy about him. And I think when it comes down to it, a surprise attack that none of the Munsters will see coming Is Thing popping out with a dagger or a magic sword of some kind to deal the final blow to a character like Grandpa, to a character who's not necessarily going to see it coming, and Thing will be there to drop the proverbial hammer when he needs to in a surprise attack. All of these great secondary characters, which are all going to be there, is my point number three.
All right. Wow. I mean, kudos to Ray for whatever stuff he was watching and brought to the, you know, light with that, what he just said. All right, here's the deal. Let me push back on some of this. Herman Monster, the vampires, Lily, and Grandpa Monster, you know, literally, these are super powerful, super durable creatures. You can stab a vampire. You can stab, you know, Herman Monster, Frankenstein's monster on steroids, and they won't care. They're not people who get hurt. That's why these humans, it's like Highlanders, like Highlander, I've got a sword, comes at Frankenstein's monster, and like Frankenstein's like, that's cute. That's just, I'm just going to stand here. Nothing's going to really hurt me. On top of that, there are instances of Herman Monster actually hitting people. Again, he is well-versed in boxing. He does actually know how to fight, and he has fought people on occasion. Didn't last long because he just knocked him over with one or two shots in the TV series. On top of that, you know, Eddie Munster, I just got to keep bringing this kid up. This is someone who gets in trouble all the time in school because his werewolf tendencies, his aggression of being a werewolf comes up, and the family say, hey, you shouldn't really, like, you know, tear people apart or hurt people or eat people or tear people apart. And guess what? He does, whatever he is. This is a person who's looking for an excuse to let loose. On top of that, pouring oil on people, I think that's awesome. But again, you're quoting, you know, a comic book version of the Addams Family. And this is not the comic book. You're using the live action. We've never seen the live action version do this whatsoever. Herman Munster, by the way, he's not afraid of fire. And as I mentioned before, he's already tanked two bolts of lightning. I love how Uncle Fester can do all this crazy stuff, but he doesn't have the power of two bolts of lightning at the same time. Even if he did, wouldn't affect Herman Munster. And I do have to agree with you. Evil Ted is a really great documentary. It taught me about the dangers of cellars and why you shouldn't go down there. And I haven't. I've never gone down, thanks to the documentary and the educational value of Evil Dead 2. Now, let me get to my point number three. And point number three, now, let's just say I'm going to call this the not-so-secret weapon. The Monster Family Car, the song that is in my perpetual workout list, as I mentioned before. Yeah, that's right. Let's just bring in Dragula. Now, Dragula is the iconic vehicle from the Monster television show, specifically built by Grandpa Munster. It made its first appearance in the episode, I believe it was called Hot Rod Herman, where Grandpa constructs the car to help Herman Munster win back the family's primary vehicle after losing it in a drag race. Yeah, that's what Grandpa Munster did. Now, the Dragula's frame is built from a real coffin. It gives a really cool macabre, spooky look, perfect for the monsters. It's powered by a scientifically and supernaturally enhanced Ford 289 CI V8 engine, where the car is theorized to go over, it's theorized to go over 400 miles per hour, while also having insane maneuverability and fantastic drivability. The bottom line is that Dragula is powered by equal parts American ingenuity and Grandpa Munster's advanced technical know-how and knowledge of magic. And remember, Grandpa Munster was MacGyver before there was a MacGyver, where he could easily modify on the fly any part of Dragula, such as spikes for tire slashing, flamethrowers disguised as exhaust pipes, which are child's play for what he can do. Think of Dragula as the mobile bat cave of Grandpa Munster. So Frank Tenor, you were talking about that before. That was a great point. And the Dragula car is what Grandpa Munster can use to tap into that ingenuity and come up with crazy ass stuff, because it's equal parts American ingenuity, technical know-how, and supernatural stuff that he can do. I just love seeing Dragula. Now, this fight's going to come down to whether the Addams Family can outmaneuver the Dragula's speed and Grandpa's wits. And the Addams Family are no slouches, and we already mentioned that, but the Dragula's superior speed, potential for surprise attacks, could give the monsters the upper hand very clearly. Plus, Grandpa's demonstrated ability to modify the vehicle on the fly with potions and inventions. This is going to be a huge factor. See, the big deal with all of this is that the Addams Family, as great as they are for the most part human. They could be maybe a more, but they are human, or some type of low-level powered human, whatever you want to call them. They're awesome. They're comedic. But in the very end, they are very outmatched in the area of power. Keep in mind that Grandpa Munster alone, otherwise known as Sam Dracula, has hundreds of years of experience, which far outweighs what the Addams bring to the table. Now, on top of this, I'm just going to bring in a couple X factors. It's Spot the Dragon, Lily, who, as a mom, is going to go absolutely crazy if anyone tries to hurt her family, as she's demonstrated before. But really, the big X factor here is Cousin Marilyn. There's something up with Cousin Marilyn. It doesn't make sense that her boyfriends show up once and then you never see him again. And there's so many of them that come in. They see the family and she's like, great, we're just going to go to the other room. And nothing. You don't hear anything. They're gone until the next day she comes in with another boyfriend. That is some murderous intent. Everything Wednesday Addams tries to do, I'm telling you, Cousin Marilyn has already done in spades. How do you think they feed Spot? How do you think the vampires are feeding and staying healthy and all that? They have a steady supply of bodies from Cousin Marilyn. She's not so normal after all. Look, the Addams family is facing off against immortal vampires that are daywalkers and super geniuses with advanced tech for their vehicle, plus a werewolf for a son, plus a powerful dragon, plus a possibly deranged serial killer, and one of the most powerful superhumans ever seen in 1960s freaking television, plus a really demented Eddie, the vampire, you know, werewolf, what I should say, type of son. This is why the monsters win this battle. All of that is my point number three.
See, I don't think the vehicle's going to come into a play a whole heck of a lot in this battle. I just don't see them. I feel like the monsters in a battle would go toe to toe. I don't think they would lean back, get in their vehicle, and then charge the vehicle at the Addams family. I don't think that's exactly the way that this crew would take that, right? And you talk about Marilyn. Really, if you look at her and break her down, she's just a less spooky version of Samantha from Sex and the City, really, if you think about it. And also, let's talk about the family's wealth. I haven't brought it up yet, but the monsters are working class, which means they have a limited set of funds to them and what they can bring to the table as far as equipment and gear goes. But the Addams family are rich, and they have artifacts, and they have ancient magical items all around them, and they have the wealth to perhaps have slightly better equipment when it comes down to it. And the weaknesses of the monsters is just too strong to overlook. Look, Herman Munster is just too sweet of a guy. He's not a guy who necessarily wants to, like, go there in a fight, and he can be easily tricked and manipulated with his emotions. Grandpa Munster, while again, you know, an older version, a less powerful version of Dracula, is also a skirt chaser. He loves beautiful women and cigars. And who's the most beautiful woman on the planet? Morticia Addams is. She's going to distract him, use her psychic powers, put him in position for one of those thing magical dagger stabs through the neck that will drop him for 2 minutes. And the last thing you brought up, Spot, who I don't think is going to be a factor, I may as well bring up the variety of killer pets the Addams family have. You've got Aristotle the octopus, Fang the jaguar, Cleopatra the African strangler man-eating plant, Kitty Cat a lion, Tristan and Isolde, the piranhas, Homer the spider, and a pet vulture named Zelda. If you want to bring animals to the table, I got a menagerie for you. At the end of the day, the Addams are too evil, too dark, and too willing to go there, and too willing to scrap, and they have answers to everything that you brought up. Addams family win with teamwork strategy, Uncle Fester's dynamite, thrown into the middle of the room, knowing he cannot hurt his own family members. It's going to be too much.
This battle is absolutely insane. Look, Frank, you've heard 3 points from both Ray and myself, and it's time for you to make a decision. But before we get to what Frank has to say, let's celebrate the Who Would Win Patron of the Week. Every week, we choose one of our amazing members from the Who Would Win Show's Patreon community and put them in a battle. Ray, which patron do we have today?
Today, we have a patron that's been with us for a very long time, but it's also been a very long time since he's been involved in a Patron of the Week. Today's Patron of the Week is once again Joe Leal. Joe, you're back in the chair.
Joe Leal. Okay, Joe is a powerhouse. He is a physical monster, as some people have called him before. Let's have Joe Leal go against the all-powerful, the menacing, the insane Fred Flintstone.
Oh, absolutely. So the thing about Joe Leal is that you're right. He has this unearthly strength. But the weird thing is, it doesn't come out when he's angry like the Hulk. His unearthly strength comes out when he's bored. Whenever he's bored, whenever he's uninterested in things, then all of a sudden he hulks up and becomes super, super strong. You wouldn't like me when I'm bored, says Joe Leal. And the thing about Fred Flintstone is he's going to come out and he's going to have his big bowling ball. He's going to have his big vehicle, his car that he's going to try to run over Joe Leal with. And that's going to keep Joe Leal underpowered. And obviously, because these are interesting things that are going to be happening around him. So he's going to be on the back foot for a lot of this battle. The problem is going to come in when Fred Flintstone tries to be funny. Because I've recently watched an episode of The Flintstones, and that humor does not age into the 21st century. Regretfully, Fred Flintstone's then going to try to make some jokes. Joe Leal's going to get bored out of his mind, hulk up, and knock Fred Flintstone so hard, he ends up with the Jetsons. Congratulations, Joe Leal. You got it done this week against a tough foe.
I mean, Fred Flintstone's durability is just off the charts. And Joe Leal just took him out. This was absolutely brilliant. Well done, Joe Leal. Remember, you too can become a celebrated patron of the week. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow and sign up, and you may be featured in an upcoming episode of Who Would Win. Frank, it's time for your decision. Take us through your process. Tell us a story, if you will, and reveal who you think wins this battle between the Munsters and the Addams Family.
Well, in all my many appearances on the show, this was by and far the hardest decision of all the battles. I need to wear 5 pairs of glasses in order to sort this out. The Munsters are stronger. The Munsters' powers are far more and varied. If you lined up the Addams Family and you lined up the Munsters next to each other, all you need is Herman to tear them apart. But that's not what we're doing. There's no Dragula because we're not using portable houses. That is technically part of a terrain. I would say pets allowed because they are family members. And that is the game that you told me to judge. So just the family. Extended family, okay. I'll even let you have the cousins, the Munsters, everybody that you've mentioned. When they see each other across that battlefield, and you look at the Munsters, you see monsters. You see a Frankenstein. You see a very obvious, doesn't really hide it much, Dracula. His name is Sam Dracula. You see Morticia. You see Lily. You see a little werewolf. You see all these things. When you see the Addams Family, you might see Cousin It. You might see Fester. But outside of that, they just look normal. And now, here's the thing. You didn't mention Grandma. Should I leave Grandma? Should I include her in the battle?
I did not feel that Grandma would... her advice is usually pretty bad.
Got it.
So I was worried that including Grandma would actually be a net negative for my argument.
I'm pretending she doesn't exist. The key, though, is Marilyn. Because these two titans of families are going to meet each other. And you're right. She's probably a sociopath. She's probably feeding Audrey, too, in the basement. But she is the Achilles heel of the Munsters because the Addams Family at their core are evil. The Munsters do everything with love. The three right in the picture behind you, you've got Herman and Lily and Marilyn and the son. The only one that has a little darkness to him is the grandpa. And even so, like, you're right, he can be distracted easily. But the first thing they're going to do is Cousin It with his 300 IQ is going to take Marilyn and keep her away. And this is supposed to be battlefield removal. They will do anything possible to save their beloved family member. If it comes down to fighting, they'd get torn apart. But I think the Munsters might walk away to save their family member, which is battlefield removal, which means win for Ray and the Addams Family. Of course, later on, it'll get torn apart. They will be absolutely ripped apart to shreds by Herman. He'll freak out and whatever. But, you know, for this moment, yeah, they. That's my decision.
You know, Frank, you're often compared to the greatest orators of our time. The national treasures of what are known as our founding fathers and what have you, based off your analysis, never mind your capabilities as an actor, which are legendary as well. I got to say you're completely wrong here, and here's why. Because if they do actually kidnap and hold hostage Cousin Marilyn, who, as we have both theorized, is most likely the source of nourishment for, I love where we're going here, Grandpa Munster and Lily, then they're going to go absolutely crazy, which then will cause a chain reaction for Eddie Munster to go crazy, which then makes Herman go like crazy, and everything is off the table. And remember, they can always find another sociopath. I have no idea what I'm saying here. Look, all I'm going to say is I disagree, but man, do I love your answer. I love your insight. I love how you went through everything and just kind of came up with what I feel is something I want to watch on the big screen. I'm not good with your decision, but at the same time, I'm really happy and entertained by your decision. It is what it is. I got the loss. Ray got the win. Congratulations, Ray. You did a great job. Tell the Legion of Audience, our fan base, how you feel with this victory.
I could say that this one made me a little bit nervous. I knew going in about the Munsters' freakish powers, and I knew that I was going to have to counterpoint my took us off in order to achieve a victory in this battle. Thankfully, I cannot say that I was nervous because I knew that I would do exactly that. I was a little bit nervous knowing that Frank Todaro was our judge. My track record with Frank and being able to convince him of things has not been stellar on the Who Would Win show. Frank is a tougher nut to crack. And that's how I know I firmly deserve this victory. Because if I can convince Frank of my nonsense on this show, then my nonsense must not be nonsense after all.
Yeah, the Munster starts with M, and M means morals, and Adam's family stands for anarchy. I think you definitely won by the technicality there, and you called out all the right things. Kudos to you.
You know, I just think the most important thing we have done in today's episode, Frank Todaro, is uncover the truth of Cousin Marilyn.
Oh, yeah.
And how she was written into the fabric of the storyline, a sociopathic serial killer written into the storyline. That was the state of affairs back in the 60s. Every nuclear family, for fans of the show, in case you didn't know this, every nuclear family had what is called a quote-unquote normal cousin that would come to visit every once in a while that was actually a sociopathic killer, serial killer. It was just a thing. It was, every family member had one. And yeah, the monsters were no different. Eddie Haskell, there you go.
A whole bunch of bodies in his garage somewhere, yeah.
Oh, Eddie Haskell is a miscreant.
Absolutely. All right. Listen, Frank Todaro, again, fantastic job at being a judge. Today's episode was not easy to figure out a winner for, and yet you did it. And I love it when even if I lose, I do love it when I'm actually highly entertained and I can absolutely see the logic of the judge, again, even if I don't agree. So with all that being said, thank you once again for coming on the show. Please come back very soon. And in the meantime, tell Legion of Audience, our fan base, where they can find you online.
Website, franktodaro.tv, ftodaro on Instagram, franktodarovo on TikTok and Twitter and all that stuff. Or just, like I said last time, if you see me in the grocery store, punch me in the arm and say, hey, dude. Well, maybe don't punch me. Or if you do, make it light. Like a gentle tap.
Well, how bad would you hit someone back if they're like, hey, I heard on the Who Would Win show I could punch you in the arm. They give you a little tap and you just turn around and normal Cousin Marilyn them back. Well, would that be I don't know where I'm going with this.
Being an immortal vampire, I've got a level of invulnerability to me that given time to prepare. But, on the spot, unless I've got the Dragula with me, it gets a little hazy.
That's fair. All right, Ray Cicanus, listen, you got the win. By the way, congratulations on being the Shocktober champion for this season of the Who Would Win show. Well done. That was that so great. It was a back and forth thing. I won Showdown September. You won Shocktober. It all works out in the end. Tell the Legion of Audience, our fan base, where they can find you.
Well, a vampire, you say? I know a thing or two about vampires, clans of them, audio dramas involving them. I just, what an interesting thing for you to say. Look, here's the deal. I am the Shocktober champion. You know why? Because I deserve it. Because I'm one of the greatest human beings to have ever lived on this planet. The fact that I got this victory today says a lot about humanity and where we're going as a people. It says that we're headed in the right direction, everybody. And I'm excited to be on this choo-choo train, a-chugging along in a positive direction. I look forward to winning season 6. I look forward to, quite frankly, finding a new person to debate going forward. After I've won, 3 seasons in a row at the end of this season? What's there left to prove? James, it's been great having you, is a thing I can't say out loud because it's not true. But we will obviously find someone more equipped to deal with me going forward into season 7. Good luck to you on your journey. Sorry, folks, the party is over. You can find me on Threads at Almighty Ray 316. Let's celebrate. Let's just celebrate me. I officially renounce Halloween. It is no longer a holiday that we will have because I am too great. I know I said I was the Showdown September champion because James said it earlier. He tricked me. It happened. I'm the Herman Munster in this moment. I just won Shocktober because of my elite brain and superior debating skills. Halloween is canceled in the year 2024. We're going to refer to it only as Ray Day going forward. So dress as me, go trick-or-treating, do all the things you would normally do, but definitely keep me in your heart as you do it.
Dear God, what have I done?
I know, Frank. Okay, you heard it here, Legion of Audience. Everyone, from this moment forward, stop all exercise and healthy eating. Make sure you sit on the couch, watch lots of Netflix, anime, whatever you want to do, and consume only lard-based products in order to really pull off the Ray Day look and feel. All right, remember.
If you don't have the Arby's app installed on your phone, you also must do that. Great deals on there for both roast beef and chicken sandwiches. Arby's. We have the meats, but they don't have the money for us to pay for me.
We just got dropped by Arby's. Way to go, Ray. They just dropped us as a sponsor. All right. You can find me on X, aka Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook by typing in at James Gabsy. Remember to join the official Hoodwin Facebook group to make a suggestion for a matchup for the show and be part of our growing community. Lard-based products. Legion of Audience. You can also find us on Instagram and Threads and TikTok at Who Would Win Show. And don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and where else you go for your podcasts. On behalf of myself, Race to Canis, and the rest of the amazing Who Would Win production team, thank you once again for checking out another episode of Who Would Win. We'll see you next time.
Crying when Optimus Prime died.
Or the days when every series had a ham-fisted anti-drug episode.
Or when you wrote fan fiction about how the Animaniacs were so hot in that water tower so they took off all their clothes and they started...
No!
No, different podcast.
This one is Knowing is Half the Podcast, a show devoted to the best and worst animated memories of your childhood.
Every week we recap a cartoon from the past to see if they're as good as you remember.
They're not.
What are you talking about? They're great!
You're both wrong. None of them get good until they're in a water tower.
No!
And Knowing is Half the Podcast.
Hey gang, I hope you enjoyed this episode and love listening to the show as much as we enjoyed making it. Quick reminder that you can support us by going to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow right now. Okay, gotta prepare for next week's episode. Hope the rest of your day is full of wins.